Our first guest this afternoon joins us now as pressure is mounting on government, on employers and the private sector, on basically anyone who has staff to pay people more. And when I say more, the talk at the upper end is of double-digit pay increases or a hike that is at least in line with inflation. And the government has started talks with the unions, but what about the private sector? Good afternoon, Geraldine Magner, Vice Chair of the Small Firms Association. How are you?
Good afternoon, Philip. Thank you for having me on today.
How are you and your members feeling about pay increase numbers that are being bandied around? 5% is the lowest figure that I've heard, and they go much, much higher than that.
They certainly do, Philip, and I suppose one of the things is when we're talking about public sector looking for a hike in a line with inflation, I suppose the current ask, I know it's not kind of in stone yet, but it's around 12%, which I totally understand. The private sector demands are not comparable as the ask is averaging from 30 to 50% increase. Salary increases to be justified and sustainable that are significantly beyond inflation has to be linked to, you know, another type of productivity. So it's not something tenable for the private sector at the moment. And I suppose, Philip, one of the things I'd like to add here, which I'm not hearing much coverage on, which might help some of the listeners in understanding what this is about. This behaviour on, you know, really increased pay levels is becoming viral. And employees are hearing about their peers getting such increases, and it originated, I believe, with the FDI tech sector, which is an outlier. And when we're talking about outliers, they often catch the headlines and the attention of the masses, but it's not reflecting the average situation. So private sector employers are really at a near impasse here at the moment.
Why? What sort of wage demands are you facing?
Well, we'll say, as I said, it's going in the tech, high tech, it's, you know, up to 50%. But in, we'll say, private sector, it's the lower end is 30%. Now, that's not comparable to the public sector wage hike asks at the moment, which the government are engaging in trade union talks with.
We were also hearing, though, Geraldine, that what people were really interested in now was their conditions almost much more than their pay. What are the demands that you're facing on increased flexibility? Are you able to meet them?
Well, there's not one size fits all. But I suppose when we're talking about remote working being a huge one that's been, you know, demanded, it's fine. It's, I suppose, productivity levels are down for many of our members when it comes to total outright remote working, which then, of course, will affect productivity. So it's not reasonable. First of all, the customer experience may be compromised, and that threatens business continuity at a successful level. One of the items that a lot of people are missing is that, in actual fact, for a company to be healthy, the relationship between the employee and employer has to be very interactive for corporate cultural reasons. And if it's remote work at a high level continuously, then it's a transaction. That relationship becomes a transaction, which then adds to the wage demands that we're currently experiencing.
You own a tech company yourself, Geraldine. Where are you getting your staff from? What are you having to promise them to get them on the payroll?
So in my own particular situation, we're high tech. So to be honest with you, we're having to look beyond local market, which isn't what we wanted. We're an Indigenous company that stayed in Ireland for a win-win of ourselves as a company, but also for Ireland. So we're being pushed into a new place, and that is to seek skills and remote workers offshore, because that's the position we're in.
And leave them offshore.
Leave them offshore, yes.
Which just goes to underline the extent, isn't it, that it's a job seeker's Disneyland at the moment. They have their pick of all of the attractions. How are your members adjusting to employees who are far more likely to leave now if they don't get what they want?
What we're seeing, the members are experiencing is, they're not even able to optimize their own businesses. You go and you think about hospitality, or, they're just not able to even sell all their tables because the staff shortages. So it's a race to the bottom, and even down to, I suppose, look, the other side of this, wage demands are coming about as well for macro reasons, and that is we have huge issues around housing and childcare. So that's causing problems too. But yes, we're having, I would say, a promiscuity of job hopping, and that trend is allowing for employees to pick their wages more, and but they're not, I suppose, from a career point of view and experience point of view, they're not sustaining. And I suppose I can't see that there's a mass one size fits all solution. Different businesses will have different needs, and from a customer experience level, it's on the down from what our members are reporting.
I wonder, though, Geraldine, are you misreading the moment that we have arrived at here, particularly when you think of this as a promiscuity of job hopping, was your phrase? There's a kind of a, well, I'm getting a sense reading between the lines that you and your members would be happy if you could adopt a more headmasterly tone and tell employees, that's it, you've had your fun for the last 2.5 years, now get back into the classroom.
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, those days are gone. We're a very kind of 21st century economy, and we understand that there are needs as well going on for employees out there. I suppose, I mean, the cost of living has gone up. Yes, that's true. No, it's not that I want to come across at a harsh tone of being Dickensian at all. No, not at all. But I suppose what I do want to do, Philip, is to be fair and bring some spotlight to some of the demands and pressures that employers, business-run, family-run businesses are under.
But I
So,
wonder,
for
like, I mean,
example,
you're
the supply
accepting
chain
here,
costs.
Geraldine, you're accepting here that the pay claims are legitimate because of
Not the extent of the wage demands, Philip, I would have
Okay,
to
well,
say.
you'll say the proportion of it is fair because of the inflationary pressures that
Yes,
everybody
of
is
course.
living under. But society has undergone an enormous shift and an enormous shock over the course of the last 2 years. And if you
It has.
can't, as employers, adjust to that, living as we do now in an age of disruption, if you can't improve your offering to your employees, you're going to go the way of the dinosaur, aren't you?
Well, I'm not so sure that I agree with that. I think it's a very general statement or question, Phil. I mean, we have had, we'll say, we take small businesses throughout Ireland. They have gone, I mean, you will take the local shoe shop. They have gone under huge digital, embarked on huge digital transformation, like never done before, to survive the demands of the economic challenges recently. There is such a thing as playing catch up for some businesses. And yes, as I said, I'm going to go back to my original point. If we're all going to be comparing what our wages should be because of, we'll say, bigger high tech FDI companies are giving to their employees, then that is not a fair barometer.
Okay, let me bring in our panel here. Niall Collins, to you first. Minister, what's your read of the moment that we're at? Who holds the whip hand here, employers or employees?
Good afternoon, Philip. Look, it's important to state that we have some very big challenges right across every sector. The economy is performing very, very strong. We're at almost full employment, as we know. But I do recognise that it is a challenging environment for employers to hold and retain staff. It's always been a feature, of course, that labour is mobile, and we can't seek to inhibit that. But in the main, I think we're dealing with a problem which we'd rather have in terms of the downside of not having to deal with these type of problems if you were dealing with unemployment and all the other issues that come with that. So government has a number of challenges.
Well, I know, but hang on a second. I mean, because inflation can be just as insidious as unemployment ultimately. I mean, if the headline figure of inflation in the Eurozone is almost at 8%, the maths on that is, at that rate, if it was sustained, everything would double in price within 9 years.
Yeah, so look, I mean, government is engaging with the unions. You know that in relation to the national pay agreements, a review of that has been triggered. My colleague Michael McGrath has been speaking about that in the last number of days. That will enter a new phase next week in terms of negotiations. There's other work going on in terms of private sector conditions. For example, proposals in relation to the living wage will come before government before the summer break. That's very, very important. Also, government has a role to play in terms of through the Low Pay Commission in terms of accepting recommendations around minimum wage, but we want to transition further to the living wage, and that proposal is currently with the Taoiseach and his department and will come before government. So there's a lot moving. Obviously, we're dealing with a challenging environment in terms of inflation. There is a suite of actions which government can take which are within our control. We have taken almost 2 billion worth of actions, as you know, and we've discussed that over the last number of weeks. We've the budget coming up in October. There's a number of levers that government has at its disposal, pay being one of them, but also you've got social welfare measures, you've got taxation
and
measures.
And there's a number of things that you've got other measures out of your control as well.
Absolutely.
And decisions that are going to be taken in Frankfurt at ECB level. And Alice Mary, when you look at the big picture here and all of the levers that could be pulled at national and international level, what is your inclination as to what we should do here? Is it pay those wage demands and possibly fuel inflation, or impose some kind of austerity through interest rate hikes?
Well, it's not pay demands that are driving inflation, and I think that that's clear. What it is we have a situation where we have runaway inflation, and leaving pay as it is effectively a pay cut for those who are, literally, it's called cost of living, those who are trying to live. And I think it's just, you know, you meant the phrase, you know, the promiscuity of workers. I think it was very notable.
Promiscuity of job hopping. The
phrase. I mean, one thing back in 2008, we had employers move very quickly to things like non-fixed hour contracts, bogus self-employment. And I think there is a price to be paid for not only that we haven't seen wages moving as they should over a number of period of time, but we also haven't seen the kind of secure pathways. And we know so many of the claims and of the disputes that happen are about pay, but they're also about progression opportunities. They're about that security of contract, and they're about things like remote working and that access to it. And, you know, when we look to the state, Ireland has one of the lowest PRSI levels for employers in Europe. Employers in Ireland pay far less in pay in terms of social insurance payments. And yet, you know, the state rightly came in and supported employers to, I think, the tune of about 6 billion with the employee subsidy scheme during the last crisis. But from the European level down, the message has been really clear. It's not about business as usual coming back, that we are in a point of change. We've had the COVID crisis, and it's sitting inside a climate crisis. And even the EU funding in this regard and the EU leniencies and fiscal rules have been about recovery and resilience. So that is around changing what we do. And I think remote working, for example, is part of that. And I also think we just need to step up in terms of recognising that, you know, it was a flaw with the minimum wage. I argued this actually at the time. It was missing a key word in determination, which was the adequacy. And that's why we need to look to the living wage in terms of that people can live on the incomes they're having, and that they can live well, and that the state doesn't end up having to subsidise poor wages in the private sector or indeed in the public sector.
We'll drill down into the conditions questions a little bit later on, Darren, but that big picture question at the start, what is your overall sense in Sinn Féin of what the direction should be? Is it meet the pay demands and possibly fuel inflation, or hike up those interest rates now and promote a deliberate recession?
No, I think we need to understand the challenges that people are facing at this point in time. And it is a cost of living crisis. And they are literally, and I see it in my clinics every week, the impact it is having. It's, you know, whether it's in terms of energy bills, whether it's in terms of rent, whether it's in terms of childcare, people are really struggling, and they need, and these are people in work who need to be supported to bridge that gap. And I think it needs to reflect that. I do think it needs to happen very, very quickly, because Because it cannot wait until the budget is, as far as I'm concerned, because the challenge for people is just to such okay. extent.
Which is the very human response to this situation, but it might lead us back to Jimmy Carter era inflation-led problems. Remember when the only way they could get out of that was by hiking interest rates to a point where it became so punitive that, it drummed him out of the White House. But it solved the problem. It put not just the US economy, but the world economy back on a more even keel.
But I know, and there are those arguments in terms of the wage pay spiral and the impact that has. But I think, there is an opportunity there. I think, to agree with Alice, Mary, we are in a different place now. Workers are in a different place. The lessons of the last decade need to be learned in terms of the gig economy, in terms of low pay. I think it is positive that workers are mobile, that they can put it to employers, that they can seek decent terms and conditions, because what workers want is a wage and terms and conditions that they can live on.
And Niall Collins, do you have a strong sense of that, that workers are saying, you know what, after the last 20 years of rampant capitalism, we've had enough. We're not going to put up with it anymore.
Well, look, I mean, the workplace evolves continuously, year to year. And I think it's important that government responds to what people want. And people effectively want a decent wage where they can live and have a quality of life. And, you know, there's a number of measures within our programme for government, like the legislation that we've produced recently, the right to request remote working. That's working its way through the Oireachtas. We've published draft legislation in relation to that, as you know. It's at committee for scrutiny, and it's open to be changed and improved. And I think it's important that we talk to all stakeholders in relation to that. Similarly, for example, government is investing a lot of money. I see it, for example, in my own constituency, where we have six remote working locations up and running, and three or four more in the pipeline, and we'll continue to drive on that agenda. So remote working doesn't necessarily mean working from home, and we're investing in those types of facilities.
Okay, we're going to come back to that in just one second, but let me just bring Geraldine Magnier back in there. Geraldine, would you accept that one person's promiscuity of job hopping is another person's legitimate expectation of a fulfilling career?
No, I wouldn't, and I don't want that comment said in isolation. One of the things I am going to pick up on here is that, meet the pay demands or not, it's been presented as if it's a choice. And here's the thing, it's an insightful fact that may surprise many that are not in business, but dozens of employers have gone and are going without for themselves, I should say, but ensuring the employee is looked after in tough times. Running a business is not for the faint-hearted. And I'm on today to represent the small businesses of Ireland. So meet the pay demands. It's not always a choice. If the supply chain for a business has put costs in their business of up to 30% to maybe 100% in some industries, and their customer won't and can't tolerate that, but yet, inside in this relationship, the employee is looking for huge demands. So I would ask you to look at it in another way.
Okay, but
are you happy to close down businesses that are viable in this country?
There are ability to pay clauses already in legislation.
Did you hear that point, Geraldine? There are inability to pay clauses in the legislation?
Yeah, there's already capacity. So I feel like the small business gets pushed out in front. But we know that there's also, we're seeing senior executive wages go up in some areas. We're seeing profits go up in certain areas. And you mentioned Carter and his response, President Carter. But let's take the President Roosevelt and the New Green Deal, which was basically saying you need your economy to be rebuilt, but you need to start from saying where are workers in it? And that is actually one of the tests of an actually healthy economy. Is, if workers are earning enough to live.
Profitability is also a crucial item for businesses. Fiscal health. I'm just kind of wondering, the points being made here need to be centred around sector sizes and business types rather than broad brushstrokes of comments being made. And I would just, before I end on comment today, to to not say that, well, actually, top-level executives are this, that and the other, that is not a reflection of small businesses in Ireland, who are 98% of the private sector. There's a broad span of them, but they are not large businesses.
All right, Geraldine Magner, Vice Chair of the Small Firms Association, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. We started the conversation there, Niall Collins, around remote working and how it doesn't necessarily mean working from home. If we start to view that for a second, please, through the lens of the climate crisis and addressing that, have you missed a massive trick here in government, do you think, when we had gone so far down the road of sorting out our transport-related emissions during lockdown, to an unrealistic level, I'll grant you, but we had started people thinking about shifting their transport patterns completely, and now we've just completely thrown that out the window?
No, I wouldn't agree. I think you know, the right to request remote working, that whole concept, that has been discussed, you know, long before the pandemic. And I think the pandemic brought forward a step change. As we know, pretty much everything shut down and most of us moved to working from home or a hybrid working model. And as you say, the you know, indicators like emissions had completely dropped. But, you know, in parallel to that, government has been, and it is a key commitment within programme for government, to invest in our public transport services, to invest in smarter travel systems. And, you know, that's got the climate change and the climate action element to it. But I think it goes to the point that I spoke about earlier, Philip, in terms of getting the balance right in terms of quality of life for workers and their families, I think is very, very important. But also it has to be done in a measured and balanced approach to protect the productivity that employers will need. And that will be the key challenge in terms of how employers run and manage their businesses to ensure that our economy remains competitive. Okay. You know, as the previous speaker alluded to, the SME sector is a really, really huge employer, but a huge contributor to economic activity in our country. So at every time, it's a balancing act, and we have to maintain our competitiveness as an economy and as a country.
Darren O'Rourke, did we miss a trick by not leaving as many people working from home as possible, or would that just be kneecapping our businesses?
We didn't miss a trick, and we're on the path to miss the opportunity of this. The minister talks about the need for measured and balanced approach. My fear is that the balance will be incorrect. I think there is a huge opportunity here. Workers want it. The climate demands it. In terms of quality of life, I know it literally would take 4 hours off a working day for people in my constituency, which is, you know, 50 odd kilometres from O'Connell Street. It needs to be a protected form of work, in the way that shift work was treated as such back then.
But the reality here is, when you listen to Geraldine Magner, that while there are some people who are undoubtedly much more productive being allowed to work from home and they're contributing less to the environmental pollution that you're talking about, there's also a suspicion that there's an awful lot of people sitting at home watching box sets.
And there is, and indeed the minister's former colleague said as much, but I don't believe that's the case at all. I think, you know, the fundamental principle, if you treat workers well and support them, remunerate them well, give them decent terms of conditions, they will be productive and will deliver. And I think that's the case time and again. And we saw it completely during the pandemic in the public sector and the private sector. So you treat people with dignity and respect, and they will return that in spades. And I think the opportunity is there. We need to set it out. The state needs to lead by example. It needs to be an identified, protected form of work. There needs to be protections in relation to that, allowances in relation to it. There needs to be the right to disconnect, you know, in terms of what a working day is. But there is huge opportunity there. Now, if you're to look at the government's approach, to me, in terms of the 13 reasons to you know, not be allowed work from home, some of them were very, very loose in terms of the impact on quality, the impact on performance. I believe it was an easy opt out for employers, and the government were facilitating them in it. And that doesn't give me an indication that this is going to be the opportunity that's going
Alice
to be
Mary, grasped. Did the government, excuse me, lean a little bit too far into the employer's perspective in those working from home arrangements?
Well, I think the real danger is that, as it's set now, we're in danger of slipping back to business as usual and then going back to a small incrementalist approach where we'll have the odd example or a remote hub here and a remote hub there, when in fact what we need and have the chance to do is a complete sea change. And we know on the environment piece, you know, with this idea of balancing, it's not simply a matter of, you know, what employers want and employees and the state is sitting there in a kind of a neutral frame. The state, the public good, in fact, is aided by people who can, being able to work remotely, be that from a home or in hubs, and, you know, are in a hybrid manner. You know, so for part of that, literally every day, and I remember this back in the, you know, when the 4-Day Week Coalition had been launching, you know, their proposals before the pandemic, you had the Women's Council, you had Forza, and you had Friends of the Earth. You really were, it was literally an environmental, societal, and equality win to change the way that work has been designed. So I really am worried that at the moment there are so many clauses, as Darren said, you know, where you can, businesses, there's so many reasons to say no, that effectively we're in danger of a complete slide back to business as usual. And I know that there's pressure on employees to get back into the workplace and then we'll talk, you know, even in the public sector. And I think, I really think that this is important. And right now, in terms of climate, it's not simply a something to balance or to think about. The next 4 to 5 years matter. And if even if we were to be piloting remote working in a, you know, encouraging it and supporting it as a state, that's actually a benefit for the state during these crucial years. And I should just notice a couple of the areas just to support SMEs, things like data protection support, health and safety support. I actually think small businesses should be supported by the state to put in place mechanisms rather than just thinking of the state refereeing between employees and employers.
Just before I take a break, Darren, a brief question that sort of a thought that occurs to me arising from this conversation about climate. We are talking in a week in which there is now only one vote that separates potentially the government from being able to govern, or a trip to the park to call a general election. And we're facing a number of really fairly tough decisions around the climate. Now, you and Sinn Féin are notionally in support of the Climate Action Plan. What are you going to do on those votes in the next while? Are you going to try and push the government out of office, or are you going to support them in implementing the action plan?
Well, we support the Climate Act. We support the carbon budgets, which set the overall targets. The Climate Action Plan contains 1,000 measures.
I know, but number one measure is to get us to 51% less emissions.
We don't support the Climate Action Plan because we have fundamental problems with very many of the measures, the way that that's the suite of policies that this government has put together to try and deliver on it.
But its goals are things that you support, yes?
Oh, absolutely. And we will continue to do that. We have in the past, and those two, and in my opinion, those are the big measures of commitment to climate action was those targets.
Okay,
and supporting
so
those
you're
targets.
Going to be giving the government a tough time over the imposition of sectoral emission ceilings.
We're going to give the government a tough time if they choose an approach that is deeply inequitable, as they have done with the electric vehicle scheme, as they've done with the retrofitting scheme, and if they continue to miss their emissions reductions targets.
Okay, Niall Collins, you have a pretty torrid time ahead of you.
Well, look, I mean, what Darren has just demonstrated there again is Sinn Féin's two-faced approach to the whole climate issue. You know, he says that they support the Climate Act, but again, giving out the message that they're against climate change by not supporting the sectoral targets. Similarly,
we're all against climate change.
Well, let me make this point because this is important. Similarly, if you look at the whole notion of carbon tax, Sinn Féin factors into their alternative budget carbon taxes. So they're taking it and pocketing it, but they're just against the next increase. So they're trying to have all of these important but difficult issues. They're trying to have both sides of the argument, and unfortunately, they need to be called out on that.
Do you see your climate action agenda being watered down?
No, I don't. And I don't think the government is under any threat by virtue of what happened this week. Because two deputies have left the Green Parliamentary Party doesn't mean that they're going to stop supporting the government. And I would doubt if they stop supporting the government based on some climate.
I know, but imagine a scenario where there are sectoral emission levels set for the agriculture sector that don't go far enough for them. They might end up voting against the government again.
I really don't see that. And, you know, we're just into a whole realm of speculation here. Look, the point
is this. You
guys
can end up forcing a vote on it, though, can't you, in Sinn Féin, Darren O'Rourke?
The point is this, Philip, if I could just finish. You know, the people of Ireland expect our governments to last the programme for government and to last a decent number of 4 to 5 years. We can't be having a situation where you lurch from election to election. I don't see an election on the horizon. The government is very, very stable in my view, and I think the public expect you know, the programme of delivery to continue. And at the end of the 5 years, we'll then have an election and we'll all be judged on our records.
All right, Niall Collins, stay with us. Darren O'Rourke and Alice Mary Higgins. I'm going to take a break.